Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's the Search Update.
All right, the latest on the Texans head coaching search is that they finally put in a request to interview Eric Bieniemy. However, they will need to wait till the Kansas City Chiefs get knocked out of the playoffs. I don't think that's going to be this weekend. They host the Cleveland Browns, but we'll see. The Browns seem kind of plucky right now. But if you're looking, if you're an Eric Bieniemy fan and you want him to be the head coach of the Texans, you now have a rooting interest in that game between Kansas City and Cleveland. You want Cleveland to win 42-38 because that means Eric Bieniemy becomes available, but it won't be the offense that was the reason they lost the game to the Cleveland Browns. Boom. There you go. Reason to have a rooting interest. Or you just gamble on the game like I do, and then you've really got a rooting interest. Seth, the other news as far as head coaching goes that I think probably is important to Texan fans. A lot of Texan fans probably wondering why the team has never reached out to Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator with San Francisco. He had a second interview with the Jets yesterday, and the Eagles, whose position just became vacant a couple of days ago, immediately requested permission to talk to Robert Saleh. I don't know which one's more confusing, the Texans waiting this long to request an interview for Eric Bieniemy, or the Texans not requesting a single interview with Robert Saleh, although Robert Saleh, a big personality, you know, as much as you and I have outlined what could be going on culture-wise behind the scenes over there. Look, sometimes you look at a big personality like Robert Saleh, there could be some people that feel like Robert Saleh might be somebody who might step on my toes a little bit. I'm not talking about Nick Caserio.
Yeah, like, right? He might. Oh boy, he's got a big personality, and he's probably, like, I know from, I was always impressed with him as he was a young man. I don't know, some people have suggested maybe there's a religious component to all this. Yeah. That'd be very, very unfortunate, right, if that were the case.
Right.
I mean, it's all you have to do is interview him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, I don't know if you're afraid that, like, lightning's going to strike you or something if he walks in the door. It's an interview. I don't know.
Right. So there's the update on the Texans head coaching search. Yesterday, the big news was Andre Johnson, who came off the top rope and dropped a huge elbow on Jack Easterby. We'll see if Easterby stays down with this elbow, if he pops up like The Undertaker. But here is what Andre Johnson tweeted yesterday. He said, "If I'm Deshaun Watson, I will stand my ground. The Texans organization is known for wasting players' careers." Boy, we could spend a day on that sentence right there, Seth. "Since Jack Easterby has walked into the building, nothing good has happened in or for the organization. And for some reason, someone can't seem to see what's going on. Pathetic." That is Andre Johnson tweeting at about 2:00 in the afternoon yesterday.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a quote in that Sports Illustrated article from November where a player says that they wish that, you know, Cal McNair could have his the veil lifted from over his eyes because he can't see what Jack Easterby is doing. I think you're going to hear more and more about this. I think more people are going to either say things or like tweets or what have you. But it's really hard. Somebody asked me a very valid question yesterday. He DM'd me on Twitter, which I encourage you to do. If you want to get a hold of me without actually, you know, having to see have your comments be public, you go to Seth C. Payne on Twitter. Ever since I encouraged people to do that a week ago, I have too many messages to keep up with.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to respond to people. But he said, "Hey, you know, realistically, this is a problem in a lot of organizations. Like, how much does the owner or the head man or woman really know about what's going on at the lower levels?" And it's a very valid question, because that is a problem in any business. Like, the rank and file, which this in football, the rank and file happens to make $39 million a year, but they're still their labor. And a lot of times management doesn't really know what's going on with labor. So it's important, though, that management listen to the complaints that they do get. It's important that management at least make an effort to understand what's going on with the rank and file. And when Sports Illustrated does an expose about one of your most important executives, Jack Easterby, maybe don't just brush it off as, oh, that's a bunch of disgruntled ex-employees. Because the article cites a lot of current employees, too. And don't just brush it off as, oh, those are just people that are out to get us. Or, oh, Bill O'Brien put them up to that. Or don't, you can't brush it off like that. You got to actually investigate. And you got to listen when guys like Andre Johnson, who don't complain. This is what's driving me insane, Sean. Deshaun Watson doesn't complain. Andre Johnson, not a complainer. Last time he even expressed anything close to complaining was when he walked off the field before the game was over because he was a little upset at it's time Matt Schaub, right? Yeah. Okay, there you go. So the two times that I can remember Andre Johnson ever complaining, they were both valid complaints. And he wasn't even – Andre was just frustrated in that moment. It wasn't like he was publicly criticizing anybody or anything.
Right.
But those are the only two times. Maybe I'm forgetting something. When two of
well, he complained to Courtland Finnegan one time.
That's true, yeah.
With his fists.
I complained with my fists.
Yeah. Continue.
So when two of your all-time best employees, who are not known as whiners or complainers or malcontents, are complaining, there's no excuse for not hearing those complaints. There's no excuse for not hearing those complaints.
We should point out Andre Johnson was in the building last year as a member of the coaching staff, so this is not him hearing things from other people and then tweeting about it. He saw it up close. That's number one. To your point, Seth, that Andre Johnson is on Twitter saying these things, he has not tweeted something that's his opinion about anything other than a Crown Royal sponsorship since April of 2019. Andre is not some sort of social media complainer. It's been nearly 2 years since he's shared an opinion on anything on Twitter. And I'll point this out too, and these are just two of several former players who have expressed this sentiment. DeAndre Hopkins, he's not a former player, but he's a former Texan. He retweeted Andre Johnson and said, "When Dre speaks, listen." Arian Foster, who doesn't have an opinion on anything football-wise anymore. Like, Arian Foster, the second he retired, he turned the page on the NFL. He retweeted Andre Johnson, and he said, "I don't keep up with much in the league, so I don't know who Buddy is," Buddy being Jack Easterby, "but I know my brother," and for him to get this out of pocket means there's got to be bleepery going on. Dre is the calmest cat on the planet. Those are the two best players that said, "Man, if this guy's doing this, man, something's got to be wrong." Several other players. Seth, you retweeted Andre and thanked him for tweeting that because Jack Easterby, as you tweeted, is a divisive force. He's the opposite of what he fools people into believing he is. So Andre Johnson made waves yesterday. Andre Johnson had the crowd cheering for him yesterday. And so I think the question becomes now, does this move the Texans to do anything? Does this even register with Cal McNair, that you have the greatest icon in the history of your franchise, certainly the greatest retired icon in the history of your franchise, tweeting these things about a guy that everybody is lined up at the gate against right now? Like, Andre Johnson is not some voice in the woods. He is part of the vocal majority here about this thing. And I'm thinking to myself, boy, if Andre Johnson doesn't move the needle, then who does? And Seth, we're left to one reasonable person left who can make the same waves that Andre Johnson is. And it might be until J.J. Watt actually goes public with this while still a member of the Texans. Not after he's been traded and talks to some reporter with ESPN or does an expose for SI or some sort of deep dive on wherever he gets traded to and he happens to make a couple casual cryptic mentions about Easterby. And I'm not saying, J.J., you need to do this. J.J., he can do what he wants to do. But I'm telling you right now, it's the only nuclear bomb left in the arsenal that has a chance of moving the needle with the Texans right now.
Well, and this is where, you know, if it feels like we're trying to, you know, character assassinate Jack Easterby, I think that Jack Easterby, by many accounts, is very, very good at working with people on a one-on-one level, maybe talking through their issues, helping them out with challenges in their life. There are people in New England, apparently, who will say that Jack Easterby helped save their marriage. So that's great. That's awesome. There's a big difference between working with people on a one-on-one level, helping them out, and running an entire organization and making decisions, you know, about perhaps people that you're also attempting to counsel or that you'd like to form that relationship. They are two completely different jobs. And Bill O'Brien is not blameless in this whatsoever. Even if Jack Easterby helped, even if I have no idea how it actually all went down. You know, obviously there's reasons to fire Bill O'Brien with or without Jack Easterby. But there's, like, Bill O'Brien brought Jack Easterby in. Bill O'Brien was here when Brian Gain was fired. So Jack, to remind people of the timeline, Bill O'Brien argues to bring Jack Easterby in, hears great things about him, seems that he's going to help the organization out and help improve the culture. A couple months after Jack Easterby gets here, Brian Gain, an actual and real GM, a guy that knows how to actually value players and whatnot, gets fired as the Texans pursue Nick Caserio. The Texans whiff on Nick Caserio, and then they go 18 months with the happy duo of Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby running things. And that's when things were just absolutely awful. And Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby were aligned, or so Bill O'Brien thought, the entire time. So Bill O'Brien, like, don't let Bill O'Brien off the hook here or start thinking that maybe Bill O'Brien was just a victim or something. Bill O'Brien is the guy who's supposed to know better. But Jack Easterby helped him out. Jack Easterby's got this way. You know, just like the Sports Illustrated article said where, hey, Jack Easterby is talking to you, but if somebody more important walks into the room, oh, all of a sudden Jack Easterby's over there talking to that really important person.
Yeah.
So when it comes to, like, the decision makers, the Nick Caserios, the Bill O'Briens, the Kyle McNairs, Easterby is going to be sure those people know just how invaluable he is.
Did you have this many former players speaking out about this? And make no mistake, Andre Johnson is the voice of the former player. Seth, you are a former player. Am I out of line by saying Andre Johnson
is the voice of
the former players? Okay, so he's
No. Plus, I'm more media now than anything, right? Like, I honestly, it doesn't matter. My voice doesn't matter as much. I talk to people and I try to get this message out, but frankly, there's people that are freaked out and paranoid. I would say they're not paranoid. They're rightfully scared because of what they see going on. I can't attach names to things the way Andre Johnson can when he puts his name out.
No. I get that, but I think it's safe to say you have an emotional attachment to this team as a former player. Clearly, you've said that many, many times. And Andre Johnson, I think, speaks for all these former players. And I would say to the Texans, your history ain't that long. You're 18, 19 seasons in right now, so this is not some sort of small sliver of an era of football of a team that's been around for 100 years. This isn't a dysfunctional 6 years for the Chicago Bears. This is a dysfunctional several years now for an organization that hasn't even existed 2 decades on the field. The Houston Oilers and their history left to go to Tennessee. Do you want to take the only little sliver of history for your franchise and basically flush it down the toilet over one guy who really isn't part of any sort of history with this team other than the last 18 months? Because that's what you're doing right now. Andre Johnson speaks for basically the entire era of Texans football pre-Bill O'Brien. And right now, all of those guys are embarrassed by what's going on with the franchise. And you're flushing the history down the toilet.
And I think the counter argument that they would offer up to that, or I could see people saying, is like, okay, yeah, but the Texans haven't done anything in that time, but look at the Patriots. That's where the mistake would be. Somebody's going to try to pit this as the Patriots way versus the Texans way. And you can't do that because Jack Easterby is not the Patriots. Jack Easterby, all these guys come out of New England and fail because they think they know what the Patriots way is, and they think it's more complex than just Bill Belichick is an awesome coach and Tom Brady is an awesome quarterback. That's the Patriots way. All right. It's as simple as that. There are a lot of places in the NFL where people work really hard and watch a lot of film and pay attention to detail. The thing that sets apart the Patriots was that they had Bill Belichick, who was a genius, and they had Tom Brady, who was a football genius. It's as simple as that. But all these guys like Jack Easterby, they want credit. Like, they want to be, they need to be sure that, like, no. It was me changing the culture.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing Jack Easterby did is he was brought in after Aaron Hernandez murdered people. And okay, so congratulations on no more Patriots murdering anybody after you got there. We know of.
That was key. That we know of. Deshaun Watson is not the only one standing his ground. It only took 9 games for Harden to dust off his nukes. That's next.
I mean, this situation is crazy. You know, it's something that I don't think can be fixed. So, thanks.
That was James Harden at the end of his press conference last night. The situation's crazy. We don't have a very good basketball team. And he says that the situation can't be fixed. And then just stood up and kind of went deuces and walked out the door. to be fair, he did answer other questions in that press conference. But we've reached that point, Seth. You and I had speculated, when would we reach this point with James Harden, who made his intentions very clear throughout the offseason that he did not want to be in Houston anymore. He wanted to be traded to a team where he felt he had a better chance to win a championship. He, at certain points during the season so far, or during the preseason at least, I remember Adam Spillane asked the question, hey, now that you've spent some time around your new teammates, do you feel any better about the situation here? And he got a next question out of him on that. And so we wondered and speculated, how long would it take before James Harden went from playing nice, which he's done in terms of what he's had to say about his teammates, and boy, we could do some nice things and blah, blah, blah. It took nine games. And now James Harden is like, nope, I don't think we can fix this thing here.
But it's showing on the court too, right? I mean, Harden after a fast start has looked less and less engaged, and his performance is not up to what our typical standards are. And the flat out fact of the matter is that he's requested a trade. Big Sarge Sports, who I follow on Twitter, and Big Sarge is he's a good guy. Big Sarge Sports with a Z. Mm-hmm. I still follow him, even though I think it seems like half his tweets sometimes are about how much sports radio in Houston sucks. But that's whatever. But he asked the question: was Harden's speech and Watt's speech the same, just different in length of time? Here's how they were different. Harden has requested a trade. Like, Harden flat out doesn't want to be here. That's the big difference. So context matters. And JJ criticized the team and said they weren't good enough. And he did it as the season was rolling on and he was still trying to get better. It wasn't like JJ was trying to get the hell out of town. For people to be upset with Harden right now, it all starts with the fact that Harden wants to get the hell out of town.
Yeah. John Wall spoke up about this after the game as well. Look, John Wall's going to be here. James Harden is probably going to be gone. Here is John Wall talking about the buy-in or lack thereof.
At the end of the day, a lot of guys here want to compete at a high level. And like I told everybody tonight, and I told the guys before, when the 1 through 15 guys all on the same page and they commit, they know their role, they know what they want to do, they know what they want to get out of this, that's the win, you all will be fine. But when you have certain guys in the mix that don't want to buy in all as one, it's going to be hard to do anything special, do anything good as a basketball team. I've been on those teams. My 11 years been in the league. I've been on a team like that my first 5 years where it was all about me, not about the team. And that hurts. And it brings everybody down. So when we can get all on the same page, we can be something good here. And we can't dwell down on it because it's only been 9 games. Like, come on, man. You want to jump off the cliff off of 9 games? There's a lot of basketball still to be played.
Yeah, okay, so he's clearly talking to James right there. Seth, what do you think this thing looks like over the next few days? The Rockets are not at home until next Wednesday. They travel to San Antonio to play the Spurs tomorrow and Saturday. They then go to Chicago to play at the Bulls. So these are at least games this team can win. They may get back on a winning track. They could very easily come back here 6-6. They're 3-6 right now. These are teams that they're playing that if James Harden is in these games, they're more talented than these teams. And then they come back home to play Phoenix and Chris Paul, by the way, next Wednesday. So that's a little bit juicy. What do you think this looks like over the next few days with James Harden?
I think I'm wondering how many times James Harden comes up with a sprained ankle or something over the next few games, or a hamstring. The classic is a hamstring or a groin, because that's the easiest one to, oh, I've got hamstring tenderness. You're not actually lying when you say you've got hamstring tenderness, because you're always a little tender and tight in the hamstrings. Mm-hmm. So my hamstring doesn't look that good. I don't know. John Wall did everything but call out Harden by name there. Maybe it starts getting acrimonious on the court. I think this is the danger. This is a danger with any athlete, but especially one that doesn't want to be there. It's never as simple as saying, well, he's a competitor, he wants to win, so he'll be out there and he'll just keep performing. It goes south really, really fast when guys just aren't fully engaged. In a sport like basketball, you're playing in the NBA. You're playing against the best athletes in the world. You're playing against the damned LA Lakers. If you're not fully engaged and 100% all in, it's going to show up. It's not like you're not just rolling widgets out onto the floor. You got people with emotions and drives and passion or lack thereof. And it looks like what you've seen the last couple nights.
I think I would add to the mix, Seth, that not only is it hard probably just from an interpersonal standpoint to just say, hey, James, just go out there and try your hardest and play. Stylistically, he's the opposite of what Steven Silas is trying to do. So if there's tension about James Harden being on the floor, it's going to be a fascinating watch over these next few games to see if he's doing more ISO stuff, if he's doing more James stuff. And to the point you made earlier in the show, that actually might be the best thing if the big picture thing for the Rockets right now isn't necessarily to win basketball games. It's to maximize the value they get for James Harden, right?
It's imperfect. Look, and after hearing the John Wall audio, I don't want to subject John Wall to having to just capitulate to James Harden.
Right.
But just in having, if you go, you know, if you just have Harden run his offense, and then Wall comes in and runs his offense for a couple weeks, then you'll get some wins out of it for sure. And ideally, you'll enhance James Harden's trade value. And it's not like Harden's trade value is ever going to be destroyed completely, but it's certainly, or much at all. I mean, he's still going to have value, but the more teams you can get just salivating for
sure.
James Harden, the better the value is. So right now, James Harden behaving, acting, playing the way he's playing, maybe there's four or five teams that are salivating for James Harden. Where if you just go back to James Harden ISO mode, maybe there's seven, eight, nine teams salivating for him, and then your price goes way up.
Andre Johnson tweeted this yesterday. If you haven't heard yet, or if you were unplugged from social media yesterday, then you may not know. He took up for Deshaun Watson and I think all former and current Texan players on Twitter, where he begged Deshaun Watson to stand his ground and said the Texans organization is known for wasting players' careers. Since Jack Easterby walked into the building, nothing good has happened in or for the organization, and for some reason someone can't seem to see what's going on. Pathetic. Seth, I actually found footage of play-by-play of what Andre Johnson did yesterday on Twitter. Would you like to hear it?
Yes, let me hear it.
Okay, here's the play-by-play for what Andre Johnson did to Jack Easterby on Twitter yesterday.
Derek Ward in the game, the lone back shot under center, third and eight at the 41 of Tennessee. Handoff Ward, flagged down, running right, and brought down across the 35-yard line. And now Andre Johnson and
Easterby
are going at it. Helmet comes off of
Easterby,
and Andre Johnson's ejected. Andre Johnson lost his cool with
Easterby.
And you know,
Easterby
is just trying to get Andre Johnson upset. Jeff Fisher at midfield with
Easterby
trying to keep him out of it. And this thing is not even broken up officially yet.
Yeah, it's not. Not broken up yet. Play by play. Mark Vandermeer on the call. Mark may be like, I'd rather my voice not be on the play by play for that.
I wonder now, Jason Lockenfora claimed or said that Jack Easterby makes $3 million a year. Somebody else told me yesterday that he thinks it's actually $3.5 million a year.
Okay.
We
should ask McLean about that, because McLean, I believe, has refuted that on our air. I don't know on this show.
Yeah, but I believe
on this station. So we'll have to ask McLean. McLean's on with us at the top of the hour.
I don't know how much of this. I wonder how much. Maybe Cal has started thinking, like, okay, wow, Jack Easterby is not worth this, but I've got a contract with this guy, and I'm paying however many millions of dollars over however many years, and he's still got several years left on his contract, a bunch of years left on his contract. That how much of this is, all right, we got to figure out if we can still do this with Easterby in the building, because I don't want him in the hook for, theoretically, I don't know, $10 million or so just to get rid of him if it's not salvageable.
Fair point. Counterpoint. Does Cal McNair behave like somebody who cares what something costs? He was paying three general managers at the same time a year and a half ago.
I know.
He paid Korn Ferry $600,000 to put a binder together that he ignored.
Theoretically, that's all at the behest of Jack Easterby, though, is he's feeding in ideas of the vision and how
so
it doesn't matter.
Working.
Nothing, it's like the vision trumps everything. All you have to do is believe in the vision. And money becomes a mere human creation.
Yeah.
We have a greater mission. Yeah. We can't be bound by dollars and cents.
A former Texan gives a stark warning about the Patriot way over at NRG Stadium. If you're wondering what may concern Deshaun Watson so deeply, you will not want to miss what Glover Quinn had to say yesterday about the Patriot culture on our show next.
With respect to their organization, we do not consider ourselves the Patriot South. We are here to lead this team the Texans way. Following this press conference, we'll hit the ground running and get to work on our football team. First order of business will be to focus on our next head coach as we look for the right person to join the Texans' culture of integrity, hard work, and doing things the right way.
All right, so that was Cal McNair at the press conference introducing Nick Caserio on Friday and claiming, unprompted, by the way, there wasn't a question about the Patriots culture or this being Patriots South. It was clearly somebody in the building or people in the building hearing what's being said on shows like this and hearing what's being said around town and the concerns of how the Nick Caserio hiring came about. And I can't impress enough that I think Nick Caserio has got a chance to be a really good general manager, but I think the way that they arrived at Nick Caserio, if we're to believe all the stories behind the scenes, is really, really disturbing, especially considering, Seth, that they have what I consider the more important of the two hires to go here, finding a head coach. And I think it's a legitimate fear, and I think this is part of what's driving Deshaun to behave the way he is right now, is a legitimate concern that whatever Cal McNair is saying about this being Patriot South is just... is hogwash, quite frankly, that this is becoming Patriots South. And there's a really good chance it could become Patriots South.
It's so strange to me. And honestly, look, Jack Easterby, one of the many, many, many things he does, because remember, he does everything except what other people don't do. What's he do? He does everything except what Caserio's doing. All right, fine.
What does he do well? Here are the things he doesn't do well.
Yeah, one of the things he does is try to help craft PR statements. And this is like one of the things he does poorly.
Yeah.
You know, if there's one thing people think about when they're Texans, they think great PR over the last several months. So... To introduce a general manager from the Patriots, like who now is one of the two most important people in your organization until you hire a coach, in Jack Easterby, who is also from the Patriots, and claim, like honestly, insult your fans by saying this isn't Patriots South, or even bring it up, like even invoke the term Patriots South. That's one of the dumbest things I've ever seen somebody feed their boss something to say.
You know what I just thought of? And we're going to get to Glover Quinn. Glover Quinn had some things to say, man, about this Patriot culture, because he played for Jim Caldwell for 4 years, who is reportedly one of the leaders in the clubhouse to become the next Texans head coach. We'll ask John McClain about that, if that's real, at the top of the hour. But Glover Quinn finished his career in Detroit playing for Matt Patricia, who nobody liked, and, oh, he was a Belichick disciple. But as you're saying that, Seth, about this, you know, the claims by Cal McNair, this isn't Patriot South, I start thinking, I'm like, when they hear that quote from Cal McNair up in New England, what do they think about that? like the hosts like us, fans, as they hear something like that, they've got to be laughing. They're like, no bleep, you're not Patriot South. You guys stink. Like, we have 6 Super Bowls. Of course you're not Patriots. What are you talking about? You're not, yeah. You know what? And the Rockets aren't Golden State South. You know what I mean?
They are. That's kind of like the satellite campus typically isn't as good as the main campus.
Well,
right?
Then that's accurate, like, for sure.
I don't know. There's like UT Cleveland, Texas or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not as good as the one in Austin.
Yeah, I just think about that when I hear that. And if I was up in Boston and I was a Patriot fan, I'm like, you get our names out of your mouth, Cal McNair. You're right. You're not Patriot South. We got 6 rings.
This is what terrifies me about Patriots South, and Glover Quinn has some really good stuff too, but let me just throw this in here real quick.
Yeah.
This is from Ian O'Connor's book, Belichick.
Yeah.
There's an unnamed assistant coach that said this. This is what keeps me up at night thinking about the fate that might befall Deshaun Watson. This is a Patriots assistant coach. If you gave us any of the top 15 quarterbacks in the NFL, we could do it. I don't think the coaches view Tom as special as everyone else in football does. Owner Bob Kraft thinks Tom is the greatest gift ever, but the coaches don't.
Ugh.
There you go, because it's the system, right? It's not Tom Brady. It's not Tom Brady, who's doing quite well for himself this moment.
That's a scary quote, considering where the Texans quarterback seems to be right now in his feelings with the team. Let's get to Glover Quinn. Glover Quinn was on with us yesterday, former Texan safety who played for the Lions. He played his best football for the Lions. He was a Pro Bowler for the Lions. Played for 4 years with Jim Caldwell, who he gushed about, and then played the last 2 years of his career for Matt Patricia. We asked him to compare the two.
Yeah, it's totally different. You know, like I said, Chris Caldwell treated us like men and you know, respected us as players, as individual, as people. And I felt like Matt Patricia was the complete opposite. You know, he treated us like kids and, you know, disrespected everybody.
That's number one. Number two, he followed up on that and said, man, Patricia would tear guys down.
What Matt Patricia did was in stark contrast to what Coach Caldwell did. Coach Caldwell came in and basically built everybody up to feel like we were all superstars. And in turn, you know, we went out and played that way.
Sidebar, I would go listen to the interview with Glover Quinn if you are interested or concerned at all about the Jim Caldwell news that he, you know, he may be among the leaders for the Texans' job. I came away from that interview with Glover Quinn feeling pretty good about Jim Caldwell as a candidate. But back to the Patriots here, Seth. Look, Glover Quinn lays it out right there. And I don't – Matt Patricia's like the poster child for trying to create Patriots – you know, I guess in the case of Detroit, you're Patriots Midwest as opposed to Patriots South. But Patricia is the cautionary tale about thinking, and I would say Detroit is the cautionary tale because Bob Quinn was their general manager. He's another Belichick disciple. That's the cautionary tale about the fear that Deshaun Watson and Texan fans have.
Scott, you know what's an even better cautionary tale, Sean, is Scott Pioli with the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. Because Scott Pioli was the general manager with the Chiefs. He was great in his role in New England. But he went to the Chiefs and did a lot of things that a lot of people said didn't really jibe with Scott Pioli's personality. Like, he's like a hell of a guy away from the facility, but he starts pulling all of this Belichick-type stuff, asking people to take pay cuts just to test their loyalty, stuff like this, kind of like diabolical stuff that Bill Belichick does and can get away with, right? Because it's part of Bill Belichick's MO. I think that what you have to look at when you look at somebody that's coming out of New England is, all right, are they going to try really hard to be somebody they're not? And some guys have done – I don't think O'Brien was really trying that hard to be Bill Belichick or anything. Bill O'Brien's a naturally cantankerous guy. So sometimes it's going to look like he's being Bill Belichick. I think Bill O'Brien was being himself. It didn't get really disastrous until Jack Easterby came in. And Jack Easterby is trying to replicate, it seems and looks like he's trying to replicate whatever his version of the New England way is, right down to the point where the stadium itself is being remodeled and fashioned to almost to look like Foxborough.
Yeah.
It's really, really weird in how many ways that Jack Easterby is trying to make a page himself. That is the danger, and that's what Jack Easterby is. Casario, I am wide open to. He might be a completely different guy, and I'm open to it.
The Glover Quinn, who was on with us yesterday, had a really interesting theory on why New England assistants are so bad at their jobs when they try to replicate what they observed with Bill Belichick up in New England. This was very, very interesting. Here's Glover Quinn, his theory.
From what I've heard, you know, they see how Coach Belichick goes at Tom Brady, right? And they hold Tom Brady, well, used to go at Tom Brady and hold Tom Brady at a high standard, right? And that's one of the things that coaches feel like, hey, if I go at the top guy and make sure that I'm going at him, everybody else just kind of falls in line. The thing is, the relationship with Tom and Bill Belichick grew over the years. So when you're seeing Coach Belichick go at Tom Brady in year 13 or 14, that's 13 or 14 years of trust, a lot of games, a lot of practices, a lot of meetings. Their relationship is different. So you can't just come into an organization and feel like, okay, well, this is how he talked and treated Tom Brady, so this is how I'm going to talk and do our top guys. No, you have to work to build that relationship with your top guys so that you can have that type of communication with them.
So it sounds like Matt Patricia just butchered that thing 10 ways to Sunday. Seth, if they end up hiring one of these New England guys or anybody off of the Belichick tree, we need to have Glover back on so we can ask him more specifically what he observed in the treatment of Matthew Stafford. Because that's really the most important person here is Deshaun Watson, right?
Yeah, and that is the really a good point to make. And that was one of the actual other things I should have mentioned into why the Patriots way doesn't work anywhere else. That Brady was a unique guy that did two things that really helped Belichick. It allowed Belichick to be kind of the weird, antisocial, cantankerous guy that he is. Two things. One, he allowed, you know, he was coached hard, even when he's a superstar, in a way that I think a lot of quarterbacks' egos wouldn't have allowed it. But two, he took those pay cuts. You know, like every damn year, the Patriots had room for an extra couple of quality starters because Tom Brady was playing at such a huge discount. Yeah. So the Patriots had more room for error, you know, because everybody makes mistakes. Nobody's perfect. Every GM whiffs a whole lot. But the Patriots always had that little bit of extra breathing room that they could sign somebody that doesn't work out. You know, it doesn't matter because we've got this quarterback playing at a huge discount. That's another thing you can't export.
It's like getting a cap exception, right? I mean, the Patriots are operating with like the equivalent in the NBA of the mid-level exception because Brady's getting $13 million and the highest paid quarterbacks are getting double that, right? You know, they're getting $25-30 million.
Which again goes back to, look, there's no special Patriots way. There's Tom Brady and Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. You know, and they had a good relationship with Bob Kraft, and that helps a lot. But that's what makes it special. Every Super Bowl winning team every single year has all kinds of dysfunction on it. There's no perfect organization out there. They write the motivational books afterwards where they paint this rosy picture of how great everything was. But every organization on earth has dysfunction in it to some level. But the problem is people think that dysfunction in New England is part of the secret sauce instead of just something that exists on the side. They think, oh, wow, the Patriots do it, so that must be the way to do it. And they export all that dysfunction. It's crazy.
Okay, so if that's the case, and if there's still a concern that this is Patriot South, and no disrespect to Cal McNair, his statement did not do anything to quell my fear, nor the fear of fans out there, nor apparently the fear of Deshaun Watson, that's the case. Which candidates are left, Seth, that we need to worry about being Patriot way sycophants? How long is this list? Of the remaining candidates that could be out there, which ones are the ones that we have to worry come in here and they operate like Matt Patricia did in Detroit, quite frankly?
Well, I don't know. I think that, look, I don't think there was a general manager that was going to come in and keep Jack Easterby. I think that they knew enough and they'd heard enough that they don't need that distraction as they're trying to start their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like everybody sees, no matter what the organization thinks, no matter what the Texans organization thinks, people on the outside see that Jack Easterby got here and a GM was gone and then the head coach was gone and Jack Easterby remains. So regardless of what you think the reality is within the organization, on the outside, it sure looks like Jack Easterby is the one who's in charge.
Yeah.
So perception is reality, and I don't think a GM worth his salt was going to come in and just let himself be Jack Easterby's whipping boy. So I think likewise, the coach that gets hired, as long as Jack Easterby is still part of the process, is going to be that beta that is okay with it and is cool with it.
I think the names that might concern Texan fans would be Brian Daboll, who recommended Jack Easterby to the Patriots back in 2013 because they spent time together in Kansas City the year before. So this whole Easterby thing started with a Brian Daboll conversation in Foxborough back in 2013. That would be one. Gerard Mayo is a former linebacker for the Patriots that played for the Patriots in Easterby's first couple years out there and has been viewed as a quote, rising star in the coaching ranks. He's a position coach in New England right now who is getting some moderate degree of head coach buzz. That would for sure be one. You know, McClain has dismissed Josh McDaniels. Others have as well. I'm just mentioning his name because obviously if he got hired, that would be a major red flag. Matt Patricia, I don't think, is getting rehired as a head coach. The other one I would throw in here, Seth, is just candidates that if you're worried about this becoming Patriot South, that if they get hired, you need to kind of throw your hands up. And more importantly, Deshaun Watson might throw his hands up. Would be any client of Bob Lamont, the agent for Jack Easterby, the agent for Nick Caserio. Leslie Frazier, who reportedly the Texans won interview, the DC in Buffalo, the former head coach in Minnesota. Not a candidate who was really on the radar this silly season for any team. All of a sudden his name's coming up as an interview candidate for the Texans. Who's his agent? Bob Lamont. So I think that would be sort of an underrated one. I would encourage Texan fans that when you see a candidate come up for the Texans, to be following us on Twitter, following the station, or following Seth, myself, because that's one of the first things I go look up is who is the agent for this candidate? Because if it's a Bob Lamont agent, then it just feels like there's shenanigans going on. Right?
He's a kingmaker. You know what I should do? I should put in a call for Bob Lamont and see, like, hey Bob, what kind of front office job can you get me?
You should call him and see if he'll come on the show.
Seriously? We should just do it. This will start off as a radio bit, and then all of a sudden I'll be offered like a $3 million a year job. With
and then I'm breaking in a new co-host. No, do not do that. Do not do
and
that.
I'll be, no, on my in my exit phone call, I'll be just angrily defending everything the Texans are doing right now.
Right.
Like, hey, you guys don't understand right. exactly how they see it. Yeah.
By the way, Ecclesiastes 3:18 says, like, wait, where did this come from?
You know what? Some of the there are some names we should go through, like Bob Lamonte's clients that we would actually be okay with that aren't on the current list.
Okay.
Did you mention the Tim Kelly is one?
I didn't. We've mentioned it before. Okay, I did not mention it in this segment, though. We should mention that. Tim Kelly, also a Bob Lamont client. Hold that thought. If you've got a web page open, save that. We can get to it later in the show. We got John McClain, top of the hour. We'll give you a coaching search update as well, top of the hour. Let's mix in a few headlines here before we get to McClain.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
Sorry, Bayway Jeep. The big thing that got everybody worked up yesterday, big headline, is Andre Johnson coming in off the top rope and dropping a big elbow on Jack Easterby. Now the question is, can Andre Johnson pin him for the 1-2-3? Or more appropriately, will Cal McNair just ask somebody to ring the bell and say that Jack Easterby submitted? Because Andre Johnson, not happy with the Texans organization right now, encouraging Deshaun Watson to stand his ground, saying, quote, "The Texans organization is known for wasting players' careers. Since Jack Easterby has walked into the building, nothing good has happened in or for the organization, and for some reason someone can't seem to see what's going on. Pathetic." There were several former players that went and retweeted Andre Johnson, including Arian Foster, DeAndre Hopkins, Owen Daniels, other current players who liked Andre's tweet or who liked Instagram caps of Andre's tweet, including Justin Reed, Jordan Akins, to name two. And obviously, Deshaun Watson fully endorses what Andre Johnson said because the two were spotted at the Rockets game last night taking a selfie together. Not a selfie, but took a picture together in the Lexus Lounge, which Andre Johnson then used that picture on Instagram, Seth, to reiterate his message that Deshaun Watson should stand his ground. This was a big deal.
I'll tell you what. Ballsy of Justin Reed and Jordan Akins to like that tweet.
Good for them.
Because those guys, those aren't high-dollar guys. Those aren't guys who are guaranteed employment or fan favoritism or anything like that. So they really go out. They go out on a limb for that. That's a big deal. Andre Johnson doing that. And what I said, when I retweeted him, what I said was that it's important for people to understand that this is not a media creation. I hear some of you listening right now, understandably think, this is just talk radio fodder. It's not local sports radio talk fodder. It's everywhere. If the NFL playoffs weren't going on, this would by far be the biggest story because there are a lot of people outside of the city of Houston that see exactly what's going on here. So Andre Johnson actually putting a name to it. Andre Johnson, who's on the search committee. Andre Johnson, who was employed with the Texans while Jack Easterby was there. Andre Johnson, who never complains about anything or hardly even says anything. It's a big deal that Andre Johnson said something.
Yeah, and I think when you say employed, we should point out not just an office job or anything. No disrespect to office jobs, but he was on the coaching staff. So he on a weekly basis saw some of this goofiness that we hear about with Easterby clearly stepping over lines of what would probably be happening inside the walls of 31 other NFL teams. Andre Johnson saw it up close. And I'll point out as well, Andre Johnson has not tweeted an opinion on anything. He's tweeted several endorsements of Crown Royal over the last 2 years. He must have some sort of deal with them. His last non-Crown Royal tweet was in April of 2019 about Damian Lillard, who must have hit a shot or something like that. Andre Johnson is the opposite of, Seth, what you were just talking about when you were saying, man, this isn't a talk radio concoction. This isn't two guys hot taking on this thing. Andre Johnson's the opposite of that. Andre Johnson, I can tell you one thing he does not give a crap about is talk radio topics. Because the dude doesn't talk, and he doesn't do much talk radio either. He cares about the organization. He cares about what he's watching a team that he helped build. And for all the, and some people may snicker at that because the Texans have never really made a deep run into anything in the postseason. This team still matters to a lot of people. It matters to a lot of Houstonians. I know it matters to season ticket holders. I'm married to one. And I know, Seth, I do a show 4 hours every day with a former player. And I know it matters to you guys as well.
Yeah, it really does, and it's hard to watch this. I mean, that's where with Andre, if you or maybe somebody in the Texans organization wants to discount this as disgruntled former employee, I don't know. Maybe Andre left under bad under bad circumstances, whatever it might be. Okay, fine. You know what? Fine. With any of these guys talking, if you want to claim disgruntled former employee, then why is this the thing they're choosing to talk about?
Right.
They don't talk about anything. They don't complain about anything. They don't say anything. But when it comes to this specifically is the one thing they're talking about. Oh, no, disgruntled employee. And that's like each step along the way. There was that expose in Sports Illustrated, which honestly, at the time I wondered, okay, how much of this is really like, I trust the whole damn thing now. I've heard enough. I've seen enough. Some people are frustrated that it's not being taken more seriously, that with the number of anonymous quotes in there, but they were anonymous. So Andre Johnson puts a name to a person who has very recently been an employee and is currently on the search committee, if the search committee doesn't in fact exist.
I would say too, Seth, I would add to this that it's not just something that's infecting the football team. I mean, that's the most high profile part about it. It's something that's infecting the whole building. I think it's safe to say. Like, this is not just something that is affecting the product on Sundays. This is something that's affecting the overall ethos of that business right now.
Sean, and part of it, honestly, is somebody that covers the team. You know, when you've got a buddy who's dating a psycho, and like, it's just, she's clearly bad for him. She's a bad influence on him. She hates all of his friends, and she's just a bad influence, but he can't see it. And he refuses to see it. And you say it a few times, and he gets angry at you. At some point, you just step away.
Yeah.
You're just like, all right, man, well, have a nice life. There's nothing I can do here. That's how I feel right now. I'm like, what the hell more? Like, how much more do you have to hear and see and stay in steady denial before you actually see this?
And I would implore, if people in a position of power are listening over there, I promise you, that is what's happening with your fan base. That is what's happening with former players. That's what's happening with current players, too, I would think, right now as well. They just can't speak up because they still need to draw a paycheck and don't want to be labeled a certain way for the other 31 teams in the league. Yeah. All right, we'll get into a lot more of this with John McClain in just a few minutes. We need to squeeze the Rockets in here as well. They lose last night to the Los Angeles Lakers 117-100. That's not the big story. The big story is the ticking time bomb that is James Harden finally went off last night, and here's what he had to say following the game.
We're just not good enough. Obviously chemistry, talent-wise, just everything, and it was clear, like I said, these last few games. From the beginning of the game, they were just aggressive, veteran team, obviously, championship team, and, one of the best teams that we have in this league. I love this city. I literally, have done everything that I can. This situation is crazy. You know, it's something that I don't think can be fixed. So, thanks.
How would you? Yeah, thanks. Deuces, and he walks out. How would you feel if you were a teammate of James Harden, a current teammate of James Harden, Seth?
I think I'd probably feel like John Wall does.
Yeah.
Where it's really, really hard to go out there with a guy that's supposed to be. This would be like if Deshaun Watson, after a press conference, said it's not going to get fixed. That was the big part. It's not going to get fixed. It's one thing to express frustration. Is if one of your teammates gets up and says, this is not the way. We got to figure something out. We got to get better. Then that's great. You share my frustration. Mm-hmm. When I hear it can't be fixed, it's not going to be fixed, and he's already asked for a trade, it's going to be really hard to go out and share the court with that guy. But, I mean, it does. People share the court with each other without necessarily liking each other or approving of each other all the time. It certainly isn't fun, and you're certainly not operating at the razor's edge of performance when you do it.
Rockets now head on a 3-game road trip, 2 games in San Antonio, followed by a game in Chicago. Their next home game is Wednesday against Phoenix. It'll be very interesting to see, A, if James Harden is still on the team come next Wednesday, and if he is, even though it's not full arenas right now, there are enough fans in there to make some noise in there about how they feel about James Harden. to this point, fans have not booed him or anything like that, at least that I've heard. I was at the game on Friday against Orlando. But this changes the calculus on the whole thing. James Harden essentially going public with, hey, it's time to trade me.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.